reducing. Court is ready to hear argument in 040570 GTE Mobile Net of Houston Inc. versus the Chair King and others.
May it please the court. Mr. Cohen and Mr. Bracken present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Cohen will open with the first 10 minutes. Mr. Cohen will present the rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. This case is about unsolicited faxes. It is not a case about advertising. It is not even a case about fax advertising, both of which are perfectly legal activity. Rather, it is about the one activity that is prohibited under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which is unsolicited faxes. That's the reason we're here today. And the issue on agency is whether GTE Mobile Net of Houston controlled the activity that is critical to agency law, the sending of the unsolicited faxes. A bit about the history of this case. It has a long and tortured history. The plaintiffs lost in many courts before they scored a victory in the 14th Court of Appeals. They first brought their court case in the Federal District Court in Houston, which held against them on the basis that the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, the TCPA, applied only to interstate faxes, and these were intrastate faxes. The plaintiffs lost on appeal to the Fifth Circuit, which held jurisdiction for such a private cause of action under the Act was exclusive in the state, not the federal courts. They then lost in the trial court on a summary judgment rendered by Judge Harvey Brown. He held on three bases that are before this court today for review for the defendants. First, that no cause of action existed under the TCPA because Texas had not opted in by passing legislation to permit its citizens to bring such a claim. Second, that such a claim existed only for the sending of interstate faxes, and these were intrastate faxes. Third, that the offensive conduct, the sending of unsolicited faxes, was done by independent contractors, not by GTE MobileNet. In this respect, it's important to realize that on this agency issue, there are two lines of authority. First, you have GTE extending down to its independent contractor and independent agent, Mobile Communications, who then hired AdverFax to do its faxing. So in respect to Mobile Communications, the holding is that GTE could be liable for the acts not of itself or of its contractor, but for the independent contractor of its independent contractor.
I didn't look at the contracts that were signed with the AdverFax or the advertisers. Apparently, they don't say anything about their customer base being subscribers or consenting receivers. Is that right?
That is right. Okay. They're silent. What you're calling the contract, I believe, Justice O'Neill, is the piece of paper, the one page that says advertising contract.
Right.
It's pretty illegible in the record. About the only thing you can read is $322.58.
Right.
There's nothing in there about who has the authority to govern solicited versus unsolicited faxes.
Okay. Let me just ask. I know in the summary judgment record we've got an affidavit and we've got testimony that says that they only did that. They only sent to subscribers, or they made every effort to only send to subscribers. Is there any evidence that was understood between the parties at the time the contract was entered?
That was understood by the parties?
Yes.
There is, Your Honor. The affidavit you're talking about is the affidavit of Mr. Chabro, who was the president of AdverFax. And what he said in his affidavit was clients who placed ads, now that would be Mobile Communications, with AdverFax were informed that AdverFax was subscriber-based and would send its ads only to people who requested it. He goes on to say, nobody's an agent for me. I run my business. Once the client approved the ad, it was AdverFax who decides who will receive the ad.
Right, but was there any dispute in the testimony as to whether, in fact, that was the case?
That affidavit was uncontroverted. It was not disputed by deposition, not disputed by affidavit.
The Court of Appeals, though, pretty much determined that it was sort of self-serving and therefore maybe not the type of summary judgment proof that is controvertible. And so, therefore, it in itself created a fact issue.
That's what it said. It compared it to the case of Anderson v. Snyder. I think that was a mistake by the Court of Appeals. The affidavit in Anderson v. Snyder is hopelessly inadequate. In effect, it says, we're not liable. Thus, give us a summary judgment. We didn't cause this. We weren't negligent. We didn't breach the contract. Anyone would recognize that as an inadequate affidavit. Here, what our affiant, Mr. Sycar, Jeffrey Sycar, said was, we didn't send this. Nobody acting on our behalf did. It challenges the English language, I believe, to try to figure out a way to say that better.
What about vicarious liability?
Let's talk about vicarious liability, Justice Medina. I think that's the biggest flaw in the 14th Court of Appeals opinion, is the discussion on vicarious liability. You will notice, if you look at the 14th Court of Appeals opinion on that subject, now this is a long and complicated opinion, for which, frankly, the court deserves a lot of credit. It did a good job in a difficult case, but on the subject of vicarious liability, it erred. The entire discussion of that is about two-thirds of a page long. You will notice it is a Texas common law authority-free zone. It doesn't cite any cases from Texas. Instead, it cites an FCC regulation, and it cites intermediate courts of appeals opinions from Georgia and from Maryland. I'm not one to disparage decisions of the intermediate courts of appeals, but I think that it's conspicuous in this case that what you have here is a court that in about three sentences takes a provision in an FCC regulation. Notice, not a congressional statute, an FCC regulation, something done by the executive branch, and says this states that people will be liable, for whom the faxes are sent will ultimately be liable. Therefore, since Mr. Sycard says these were sent by our independent contractors, there's per se automatically a fact issue that across the board prevents summary judgment. Now think about that for just a second. No discussion of state independent contractor law. No discussion of Shell v. Comp, Exxon v. Tidwell, of St. Joseph's v. Wolf, none of State Farm, common name here today, versus Traber. Not a word about control. Just if you use an independent contractor, you can be liable. I respectfully submit that is the opposite of Texas law. If you use an independent contractor in Texas, as in most other states, as a general rule, you're not liable unless there's a fact issue about how much control you exercise over the activity of the independent contractor, the particular activity that injured the plaintiff.
Do we reach that question if we decide that Texas is an opt-in state?
No, ma'am. No, Justice O'Neill, you do not.
And do we reach the statute of limitations question as to Chick-fil-A?
I don't want to steal Mr. Bracken's thunder, but I'll say no. Each of these questions is an independent question, at the Tigris and Euphrates of state and federal law. And if GTE Moldland prevails on any one of them, it prevails, I believe, with a reversal and an addition, without discussion of either of the other things. What is determined when you talk about control? The reason I mention this is what's missing from the 14th Court of Appeals opinion. What is determinative is answered in the case of Exxon v. Tidwell. We consider the nature of the matters to which the right of control extends to be determinative. And where should this court's focus be? The focus should be on whether Exxon had the right to control the alleged security defects that led to Tidwell's injury. Thus, in this case, it should be on whether GTE MobileNet had the right to control the faxing defects that led to the plaintiff's injury. And why is that the law? Because, as the court said in Tidwell, applying the traditional test of right of control over general operations simply does not answer this question. If anybody missed that point in 1993, it was driven home more recently in 2004 in the recent case of Shell Oil versus Kahn, in which this court stated through Justice Brister, it is not enough to show that an oil company controlled some security measures if the ones it controlled had nothing to do with the criminal act that ultimately occurred. Thus, I would urge to you It is not enough that GTE controlled some advertising or even some faxing measures if the ones it controlled had nothing to do with the plaintiff's injury.
That's about 10 minutes.
That's about 10 minutes, and I know Mr. Bracken is looking at me with the hostile view. Thank you.
Good morning. You find that this is an opt-in state, because I think you should. You don't have to get into limitations issue.
Let me ask you a question on that point. I was a bit perplexed by the Court of Appeals opinion in that it seemed to indicate, because arguments had not been made about the pre-1999 Texas law, that somehow we couldn't consider it. And it seems to me you have to consider it in interpreting what this means for Texas.
I agree with Your Honor. Certainly that's not the course that Autoflex took. Autoflex looked at what they considered to be the unambiguous language of the statute and the rule of the court again. From a Chick-fil-A standpoint, I think it's that black and white, with all due respect to Judge Cross. And I think you can look at it and determine what that language means based upon established case authority and the statute itself and determine what it means. That language obviously is important to Chick-fil-A with regard to the limitations issue. And my opposition here before this court wants to argue that this is simply an analysis for this court to see what federal limitations provision applies to a federal law. Well, you can't look at it like that in a vacuum, where the very statute that we're talking about says that where procedural law is in Texas, and remember, of course, that this cause of action can't be brought anywhere else but in the state of Texas in our district court system. So we think a proper analysis, if this court is persuaded that Texas procedural law applies and it should be based upon the Chu opinion, where you have a situation where you have a federal cause of action that admittedly can only be brought in state court, you need to defer to the state statutes of limitation. And furthermore, the Caleb opinion, authored by Judge Rabbit, which talks about the fact that when you have a tort claim, which is, this is admittedly what we have here, you go to the two-year limitations as opposed to the three-year limitation. And it's an easy determination before this court because our opposition never before Judge Brown or at any time before the Court of Appeals ever argued that the four-year Texas residual statute of limitations should apply. So with all due respect, we think they're precluded from you and making that argument. We think the case law is clear that to rule that a four-year federal limitation statute applies would be to emasculate the language that says, if otherwise permitted by the laws or rules of the court. Again, the court we're talking about here is the Texas District. We believe that Judge Brown appropriately applied the two-year statute. Judge Frost likewise found no error, and we'd ask that the court not remand this case, but rather find in favor of Chick-fil-A on the limitations issue. If there's no other questions.
Thank you, counsel. I neglected to mention earlier that Justice Wainwright is not sitting in this case. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Please support. Mr. Wright and Mr. Forbes will present argument for the respondent. Mr. Wright will open the first 15 minutes.
May it please the court, and with leave of the court, I'm going to address the issue that GTE has raised and leave to Mr. Forbes a few minutes to talk about statute of limitations. Mr. Cohen criticizes the Court of Appeals for not citing the Texas agency.
Well, let me just ask you, do you agree that if Texas is an opt-in state, that takes care of everything?
Well, it disposes of this case and will send it to the United States Supreme Court because this will become the first state that holds that.
Well, and I want to ask you about that. How many other states have determined that this otherwise permitted language is an opt-out type provision?
There's about nine other cases that all reject opt-in. I believe two of the cases, and there's two recent cases that I should bring to the court's attention. A case out of Maryland last August, and a federal district court case out of Louisiana that I'll get the cites for here in a minute, that both say it's really acknowledgement. Now, acknowledgement is the third alternative that we did not brief in this court because when we briefed it, we were trying to convince the court not to take the petition, that the Court of Appeals was right. And we went under either opt-out or acknowledgement. But the Court of Appeals discusses the acknowledgement theory, and two recent courts have adopted that. No court except Autoflex out of the Fort Worth Court of Appeals has ever said it has to be opt-in.
Well, let me ask you, of those that have said it's opt-out, have there been statutes in those states that dealt with unsolicited junk emails or junk packets?
The Maryland Court of Appeals, Intermediate Court of Appeals, had held, and I believe this is cited in the briefing, that a prior Maryland statute, in effect, opted out of the later TCPA. The Maryland Supreme Court last August said, no, that's not right. In the first place, this is not an opt-out statute. We did not opt out. This is an acknowledgement statute. Opt out and, in fact, opt in create too many constitutional problems, says the Maryland court, says the Louisiana District Court in the accounting outsourcing.
But what type of construct did Maryland did any of these states have to deal with these type of?
Well, they had a statute that was probably similar to Texas' statute that outlawed it but did not create a private right of action prior to the passage of the TCPA.
Do you think that's significant in analyzing this issue? I mean, the Court of Appeals sort of glossed over that, but it strikes me that if it's unless otherwise, whatever the language is, unless otherwise.
Well, it says if otherwise permitted.
If otherwise permitted. And Texas otherwise permitted.
Yes, Texas otherwise permits this by having courts of general jurisdiction that are obliged automatically to entertain cases under federal statutes.
No, but Texas otherwise specifically permitted through criminal action, through a Class C misdemeanor, right?
Well, if Your Honor is going to say that you can opt out prior to the option even being given to you to opt out, I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's logical to say that Congress already knew that.
Well, it's not so much that you've opted out, it's that you've already crafted a relief mechanism. And so if you've crafted a relief mechanism, that means there's no private right of action.
Well, except that the TCPA says that it preempts any less restrictive state statute, even as it has to do with intrastate factions. So, you know, to say that Congress went to all of this trouble thinking that nobody was going to implement it because 40 states already had some law that probably, you know, many of them did not create a private cause.
Well, help me with that preemption language. If it preempts, why would they let some states say, no, you can't have a private cause of action?
Well, that's the difficulty with the opt-out. And my client would win either under the opt-out or the acknowledgement. But to tell you the truth, I think the acknowledgement theory makes more sense across the board. That's what we argued in the Court of Appeals. And that's what, you know, these more recent cases have adopted and said, well, you know, we're creating constitutional problems by saying that states can just take themselves out of enforcing this federal statute.
Well, but you know, only if the states aren't enforcing it in another way. I mean, they can't. I would agree that if the states weren't doing anything and there was nothing on the books about it, they couldn't ignore it. But that if they've already crafted a remedy of their own, then they're not ignoring the federal piece.
I mean, they're refusing to enforce a private right of action that Congress expressly created.
Because they've otherwise provided.
Well, otherwise, I don't think it's otherwise providing to say, no, you can't do it.
But what's so unusual about that? I mean, the Congress has said, created federal causes of action, so you go to federal court with these. That's not a problem. It's not a constitutional issue.
Well, here, the statute has been interpreted by federal courts to divest federal courts of jurisdiction. So that now what GT is arguing is that Congress created a private cause of action that could be brought nowhere until some state decided to opt in. So that's the position they find themselves in. Now,
what's this vicarious liability issue that you're going to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about that, and I appreciate the question. This is a federal statute. Whether we ever get to Texas law of vicarious liability is a big question. Congress, and the United States Supreme Court have empowered the FCC, that GTE made fun of, to interpret these statutes and enforce it. It's right there in the statute. The Supreme Court has said, and we cited the Meade case in our brief, that, you know, no matter what the rule is somewhere else, in the federal government, when an agency is empowered to interpret and enforce a statute, its interpretations are given great weight. In fact, they're given controlling weight unless the court finds it's inconsistent with the statute. So when the FCC says the people on whose behalf the fax is sent are those who are liable, that has got to be given weight, and that's exactly what the Court of Appeals did. But if we get to Texas law, the record, I think, has been grossly underestimated here. Mr. Sicard's affidavit says these faxes were sent by their agents. He called them independent agents, but sent by their agents. Their contract, GTE's contract with MobileNet, requires GTE approval in advance of advertising, and that's what they got. There is a document in the case, the pre-approval form, that was sent from mobile to GTE MobileNet.
Doesn't that same memo prohibit representatives from advertising via fax?
That's a different memo. There is a memo that says that, and yet even after that memo, GTE expressly authorized with its signature and paid for advertisements from AdverFax. There are invoices in the file, in the summary judgment record, checks by GTE directly to AdverFax. And GTE's own admissions in this case say and admit that these ad agencies had GTE's permission and authority to send the faxes. There was a question about, you know, whether they were told this was just subscriber only. Our affidavits, our clients' affidavits contradict that, because we got faxes from GTE and we did not consent and we were not subscribers. So for them to say that, oh, this was just far removed and we didn't know anything about that, is not only contrary to the statutory intent, as found by every case that has addressed this, it's contrary to Texas agency law. Now, and, you know, we keep going back and forth between independent contractor and agency. They are an agent. They signed an agency agreement. Mr. Sicard says they are agents. An agent can bind his principal if he's acting within the scope of his authority. They were expressly authorized to send faxes. They send a fax to somebody that's unauthorized. Are they liable? If you hire a driver, and that driver is your agent, and you tell him not to run red lights, and he runs a red light, even though he said, I'm not going to do that, is the company liable? Yes. This is a common principle of agency law. These cases are talking about Wolf and Traver, about a professional being able to exercise their own professional judgment, a doctor, a lawyer. That's not what we're talking about here. The very affidavit that Mr. Chodro they're talking about said the customer, GTE, got to choose where these faxes were going, the zone. They controlled the content. They controlled the time or the date when they were going to be sent, how often they were going to. And AdverFax's own advertisements to get customers like GTE says, look, you know, this is a great way to send advertisements out. It costs 2 or 3 cents a page or a piece rather than, you know, sending a mailer.
Well, but on your, let's take your chauffeur analogy. If it's true, if the chauffeur ran a stop sign, that would probably be within the scope of the agency. But if the chauffeur loaded the trunk up with bombs and blew up the World Trade Center, that would probably not be within the scope of the agency. So there are limits. There's only so many intentional acts this agent could do for which the principal would be liable.
Well, it doesn't matter whether the sending of the fax is intentional or not.
Well, you don't send fax by accidents.
No.
I mean, you intentionally send them.
But you,
and you know whether you have authority to send them to those people or not.
Well, that's what I think may be in dispute, because they've got this massive computer database of thousands and thousands of numbers, And they say, you know, if you look through the record about how they compiled the list over time, some of this was before the TCPA. They said they had these people. They also say when people called and said, we don't want to be on your list, they took them off, which indicates that they had people on there that didn't really want to be on there. So I think the intentionality is not really an issue at the threshold. If we can prove GTE intentionally sent this to people that didn't want it, we get $1,500 of fax and not $500. That's what the statute sets out. But I think that, you know, under the Celtic Life case, which we've quoted, an agent is normally responsible and can, a principal, that is normally responsible for the conduct of the agent within the scope of their duties. I think that, you know, as I said, this accounting outsourcing case is 329 F sub 789. I believe that's cited in our petition. All of the cases, in fact, on all of their points, are against them. They come here without case authority, except for the Fort Worth case. They come here without the support of anything the FCC has said. The FCC is with us on interstate, intrastate. The FCC says a cause of action can be brought right away unless the state has prohibited it. So that would indicate an opt-out. The FCC, as I've noted, has said that the person on whose behalf the fax is sent is liable. So with due respect, I think the Court of Appeals got it right as far as it went on GTE's points. We ask this court to affirm that in part, and if there's no questions on these issues, I'll relinquish some more time to Mr. Ford to address the statute of limitations.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Congress enacted Section 1658, the four-year default limitations period, to provide a uniform four-year statute of limitations for all federal action that it enacted after 1991 that did not contain an express limitations period. And the TCPA meets all of these criteria. The only reason that Congress put the except as otherwise provided by law exception into Section 1658 is because it thought that maybe in the future Congress itself may want to pass a civil action that contained a different limitations period. It did not put that language in the statute, as Chick-fil-A argues, to revive the very practice that it meant to eliminate by that statute, which was borrowing state law for federal actions. There's numerous reasons why the Court of Appeals was wrong on this. The easiest reason to look at is neither the TCPA or Texas law provide otherwise. Under the exception in Section 1658, the TCPA has no express limitations period. And that's likely because Congress recognized that just a year earlier, they provided a four-year default for all federal claims. Texas law does not provide any specific limitations period for the TCPA. Nothing in the legislative history of the TCPA says that Congress meant for this ambiguous language, if otherwise permitted by the laws or rules of court of a state, meant to extend that so that states could create their own limitations provisions. The only mention in legislative history was that states were allowed to control and administer these claims by venue rules and by jurisdictional rules. And if you look at it under that analysis, that the states can only control the venue and jurisdictional rules, this case is no different from the Jones case. The United States Supreme Court in Jones v. R.R. Donnelly applied Section 1658 to the Civil Rights Act of 1991. And the only difference between that case and the TCPA is that states have exclusive jurisdiction. But other than that, there is no difference. And that exclusive jurisdiction only, you know, does not give the states the right to set limitations periods. All that it does is give them the right to administer these claims through their venue and jurisdictional rules. Chick-fil-A makes the point that, well, these cases can end up or cannot end up in federal court when, in fact, the federal district courts are already starting to accept these cases under diversity jurisdiction. I've cited those in my brief. So if we go with Chick-fil-A's position, then we're brought right back to the position that Congress meant to eliminate, which was applying state law limitations to these federal actions. And I noticed that my green light is up, but I think that's for the 5 minutes on time, so I'll just continue to speak.
Can you speak to the opt-in, opt-out acknowledgement argument?
Sure I can, Your Honor.
Okay, because I feel like I may be missing something. It seems that Congress intended to allow state courts to bring suit if the faxes were interstate as well, because they had not been able to do that before.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Why would it not be a reasonable interpretation to look at this language? A person or entity may, if otherwise permitted by the laws of a state. Well, Texas did not otherwise permit, because Texas didn't have a private right of action. Texas dealt with it by criminal statute. So Texas did not otherwise permit. So why couldn't you interpret this as Congress's intent if a state has decided to allow a private cause of action? We're going to let them go for interstate as well. If they've affirmatively made a decision not to allow a private right of action, they don't need this. If they've done nothing, then it would be, there's nothing to prohibit. I mean, it would be otherwise permitted because there's nothing to hinder it. Why would that not be a plain language interpretation?
I think it's a reasonable interpretation, except the fact that all but 40 of the states had already passed legislation trying to regulate these faxes. All the states hated this. Congress hated the junk fax. The states hated it. So
did most of the states do it through criminal or civil?
I don't know the question. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, but wouldn't that be critical? Because if they allowed a private right of action civilly, then this would do just what the statute intended to do. That is, allow them to pursue civilly interstate. But if a state had chosen to do it criminally, then it did not otherwise permit a private right of action and would therefore have to opt in.
I see your point. I don't know how many states had passed civil legislation at that time. I would think that most of them had. And regardless of the point, whether it's criminal or civil, they're trying to regulate these interstate, and they needed help for Congress. Go ahead.
I can see that, too. It would make perfect sense to me if they had done that civilly, they wouldn't then need to opt in after this, because this just gives them that supplement. But if they hadn't done anything at all, that this would say there's really nothing to stand in the way, it's otherwise permitted because there's nothing dealing with it at the state level. But if there's a criminal enforcement piece, then a private right of action is not otherwise permitted. Therefore, you'd need to opt in to get this federal supplement.
If there's only a criminal, I believe there would be a private right of action, because Congress, when they passed the TCPA, they meant it to be immediately enforceable. And the FCC has actually stated that. And as Mr. Wright said, they are authoritative on this issue. If the question was asked, or I don't know if the question was asked, but they said a person, as soon as the TCPA is passed, they have an immediately enforceable action in state court. So whether or not the 40 states had gone criminal or civil, they needed help with the interstate regulation of faxes.
If all this language meant was you have state courts, they're open and you can go into state courts, why would you need this? Because everybody's got state courts and appropriate courts of that state to bring the federal action. What does this language mean?
The if otherwise permitted by the laws or rules of court of a state and bring an appropriate court of that state, I believe all those address different concepts. I mean, they address venue and jurisdictional laws. I don't, you know, Congress wrote that in there. I don't think we have to say that it would be superfluous or redundant just because they put that language in there. Again, I mean, they were just trying to be clear, as far as I'm concerned, on the acknowledgement position. And you know, you can if the jurisdictional laws and rules of court and venue rules permits you to do it, then you can bring it in an appropriate court of that state, which would, you know, presumably mean, actually that would probably mean the jurisdictional rules, whereas the laws and rules of court would mean venue rules, personal jurisdiction rules.
So you would say it doesn't mean that courts, state courts, can decide how they want to prosecute them. If they've made no decision, this gives them an avenue for relief. But if they've decided we only want to do these criminally, we only want to authorize the AG, we don't want to flood our courts with these cases, the state could not choose to do that.
They couldn't if the acknowledgement position was taken. They could if the opt-out is. But, you know, state court can't refuse civil rights actions. They can't infuse other federal law. So the TCPA is no different. The only reason the language is inserted was to make sure that everyone knew that they weren't encroaching on state sovereign rights to run their courts. And that's in the legislative history. I think Senator Hollings said it.
Any further questions? Thank you, Council.
May it please the Court. As you point out, Texas already has a procedure in place, had it in place before the TCPA. It was in the criminal system. People entitled to bring this public, not private, cause of action were the 252 district attorneys of the state.
Would the ruling you seek be consistent around the country with what other courts have done or not?
An opt-in ruling would not be consistent. I concede that it is a minority position. Courts are split on it, and the Autoflex case is the major proposition in favor of it. So it would not be consistent with all the other courts in the country.
It seems to me, and of course I haven't read the cases, but it seems like they analyzed the opt-in, opt-out acknowledgement just based on this language alone without looking at what the state already had in place.
I cannot argue with that. I'd like to point out that it was specifically addressed by counsel a moment ago that an opt-in provision would not be consistent with an acknowledgement position taken by the federal court for the Middle District of Louisiana. I respectfully disagree with that. The acknowledgement position is, as I understand it, it's between the opt-in and the opt-out position, a median position that says that states generally have the right to structure their own court systems according to their own procedural rules. Texas did. It provided a criminal remedy.
Well, and that's why it seems odd to me to ignore what a state has done in deciding what this language means. Because if is there any indication, I don't know if I can say it like I said it a minute ago, but is there any indication that Congress did intend if a state's got a private right of action, we want to expand it? If they don't, then this creates it. But if they don't permit a private cause of action because they've crafted a criminal remedy, then this was not intended to stand in the way.
Your Honor, I'll try to answer that by saying that if the Congress intended that everybody was in, unless they opted out, all they had to say was, unless otherwise prohibited by state law, instead of if permitted by appropriate state court rule or law. I think the meaning of those words would be clear to any lawyer. In one case, the onus is on the legislature to act affirmatively to get in to the regime. In the other, it's upon them to get out of the regime. I'd like to make one observation on the subject of interstate versus intrastate. One question not answered in the briefs of the plaintiffs or in their argument today is why would Congress spend 1 minute giving states control over intrastate faxes? It is undisputed that at least since 1934, under the FCC Act, the act we're considering today, that it applies to interstate. It reserves intrastate communications to the control of the state courts unless specifically otherwise provided. Although they say there is a broad provision to the contrary, I ask the court to please note Section 152B of the Federal Communications Act. That's the part that was added when they added the amendments, including 227, which is the Consumer Protection Act, and the language in Section 227D&E. Which says that state law is preserved except for the technical and procedural standards in Section 227D governing all fax communications. I'll close with this observation. I know that Chief Justice Jefferson has recently addressed the legislature and the state of the judiciary about the issue of judicial pay. And I would simply say that if the state of our law now is that our state courts are in charge of enforcing exclusively jurisdiction, with exclusive jurisdiction, federal causes of action, and doing so under law dictated not by its own precedents, but by the, not even by Congress, but under rule of the FCC that displaces all state agency law, then truly, you already are federal judges, and I think a great case could be made in the legislature to raise your pay up to the level of those judges.
Any further questions?
We respectfully urge the court to reverse the judgment of the 14th Court of Appeals and render judgment on behalf of the people.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted. That concludes all oral arguments today, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.